Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. We're going to be spending an hour together. Can you move up a little bit closer to the mic? There's a lot of people talking all around us.
Yeah.
And it's hard to pick it up. I'm going to be asking you a lot of questions about my words.
I'm sorry.
Yes. Thank you. I want to know about what your life was like before the war, get the details of your experience during the war, and a sense of what happened to you after the war, after liberation, okay?
All right.
Do you have any questions before we begin?
No.
Okay, Fred.
Go ahead and shoot.
Okay. Where were you born?
I was born on September 28, 1925.
In Berlin?
In Berlin.
And your father and mother, what did they do for a living?
My father was a, shop manufacturing men's clothing.
And did your mother work?
My mother worked in the shop, yes.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have one brother who's 3 years older than I am.
Uh-huh. That's it? Two children?
Two children, yes.
Okay. Were you a religious family in Berlin?
Yes, yes.
You were Orthodox?
Orthodox, yes.
You went to Cheder?
I would not term it the Cheder. It was a religious school.
And did you go to public school as well?
I went into a public school, Jewish public school.
A yeshiva?
No.
No?
In Germany, we Jews had to go to a Jewish school.
From what time did that happen?
Since the first grade.
So that would be since 1931.
Yeah.
You went first grade in 1931. So as early as 1931, there were special laws for the Jews?
Yeah.
When did that start?
That started when Hitler came to power.
When was that?
1933.
But even before that, you had to go to a Jewish school in 1931.
Wait a minute. I don't remember that I went to school when I was 6 or 7 years old, I think.
Okay. So it started in 1933.
Yes.
What other restrictions were there on you and your family? Well, before we go into that, I'd like to get an idea of when you were a child. Maybe this is hard for you to remember since you were so young.
No, I remember everything pretty vividly when I was a child.
Okay, good. What kind of relationship did you and your family have with non-Jews in Berlin before Hitler? Were there signs of anti-Semitism at that time?
Well, yes, there were. And we strictly associated, my father strictly associated himself with Jewish people.
Always?
Always, yes.
So you didn't have much contact with Gentiles?
No. The only contact we had with Gentiles was, I remember that he had people working for us where he somehow established some kind of a relationship that that he was friendly with, you know, that at very rare occasions they might have invited us. And I remember that when my father and my late mother, you know, they went away on a vacation, they took us in and cared for us.
The Gentile employees.
Yes.
Did they treat you well?
Yes.
So Hitler came to power in 1933, and in what way did that affect you and your family?
Well, at the beginning, it did not affect us at all, being the circumstances didn't change that rapidly at the very beginning. They succeeded in establishing it by establishing a policy that Jews were not allowed to go here in a park and not in the movie, not sitting on a bench, not going, you know, in certain public places. That happened around 35, 36, yes.
And what kind of restrictions were there on you? You couldn't go to the movies?
No. As a Jew, you were not allowed to go to the movies. You were not allowed to sit at the benches. They were marked for Aryans only. And
so you were 10 years old when that kind of stuff started to happen.
Yes.
How did you and your family feel about that?
Well, I guess my father thought, you know, that this is just a restriction and it's not going to go any worse than that. And, you know, we took it in stride, so to speak, of, you know, that this is what it is, that's what you've got to live with. If you want to remain in Germany.
Did you have any thoughts of leaving at that time, 1935?
Yes, my father started to make inquiries. There was some family from my mother's side in America, and we started to write to them to get us affidavits. So that took place over years, and we were put on a waiting list when our number and the quota system came to come through, you know. So that was already in 1938 that they were finally able to get us papers, you know, for the immigration to the United States. But due to the quota system, we were put on the waiting list when we were able to be called to the consulate to receive our visa. On the interim, the war broke out. And, you know,
and that ended that.
That settled that.
That's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate.
Yes.
Well, can you tell me, war broke out in 1939.
Yes.
Can you tell me about you and your family between 1935 and 1939, what life was like in Berlin?
Well, life was a strenuous life because the Nazi powers, the Nazis started to get more and more power, and the actions against Jews became more and more noticeable, and the anti-Semitism grew more and more, not only from the adults but as well as the children.
Can you give me some sense of your own experience during those years, what it was like to you?
I was playing on the street with the kids my age, you know. They started to call me, you a Jew, you go away, you know, we can play with you, and things of that nature. And I found to be discriminated by that the Gentile children refused any association with me, being I'm Jewish.
How'd that feel?
Well, that felt of being rejected, just like somebody would have a pest. You know, you feel rejected not because as a human being, but as a person being of a, I shouldn't call it religious, but as of a tribe, you know, a Jewish tribe, that you are a Jew that nobody wants to be bothered with him.
How else did it affect your family? Was your business taken? Did you have to move? Things like that.
Well, I wasn't very much informed in my father's business because I was a youngster. I went to school and I was busy with my schoolwork and so on and so forth, you know. But my father always complained, you know, that the work he used to get from the supplier diminished from time, you know, from time to time, and that started to be less and less. So he couldn't employ, he used to employ about 10 people. And as time got worse, you know, he had to have a smaller shop. Did we, you mean at the time during the war? I'm sorry, I didn't get your question.
Did you and your family belong to any Jewish organizations?
Yes, I belonged to the Maccabi HaShomer HaTzair and to Bar Kokhba.
Mm-hmm. What were they?
Bar Kokhba was an organization which dealt mainly with I'm looking for the right word, you know, like gymnastics and sports. And Maccabi was a Zionist organization where informed and practiced Jewish history and, you know, sort of preparation for an aliyah to go to Israel.
The Zionist organization, were those organizations continued to, were they allowed to exist as time went on? What happened?
Well, it existed during the time, but then as things started to get worse and people started to leave Germany and immigrate to various other European countries and even go on Aliyah to Palestine, it started to be less and less and less. When I left Germany in 1939, the organization only had a very minimal amount of members.
Okay, you left Berlin in 1939?
Yes.
Under what circumstances?
Under very not ordinary circumstances. Can I smoke here?
Sure.
Not under very ordinary circumstances. In 1938, the German government decided to take all Polish citizens and send them back to Poland. So in 1938, that was after the...
Polish Jews? Polish Gentiles?
Polish citizens, which was 99.9% Jewish. things started after the assassination of the ambassador in Paris, which was done by a fellow by the name of Greenspan. They one day they just retrace it. You know that Germany was a dictatorship country. Everybody had to be registered, what you are, who you are, what your nationality was, and so on and so forth. So it was very easy for the police to find out who you are, what you are, and come and pick you up. So when they picked up my father, being he was Polish, and they repatriated him and my late, I shouldn't say that, my brother back to Poland. So one beautiful day in November, Poland was faced with the absorption of thousands of citizens which they never knew existed. I shouldn't say they never knew it existed, because everybody had a passport, but that they were Poles not living in Poland. And
so where did your father and your brother were sent back to Poland?
Yes.
Where in Poland were they sent?
Well, they were sent to an absorption center, and then from there my father was permitted to go back to the town where he was born.
And your brother?
With my brother.
And what happened to you and your mother?
We remained in Berlin, because Poland put a stop to it, and they said, we are going to issue visas to these people to return to Poland, the wives and the children. I was just 13 then, and they didn't take me, but they took my brother, he was over 13.
And what happened with you and your mother? You stayed in Berlin.
We stayed in Berlin. And
how did you support yourself?
Well, we gave up our apartment and we moved in with another family, where also the husband went back to Poland. And I did some odd jobs. Not that this supported us, but you know, brought in a couple of marks every week.
Did your mother work?
Yes.
What did she do?
She was a seamstress.
What was life like in those years without your father and your brother and you and your mother living with another family?
Well,
what was it like? Tell me.
Well, life was sort of a day-to-day life. I mean, socially, we only associated with close family. We kept together. And we were waiting and helping each other, you know.
Waiting for what?
For the visa to go to Poland to join my father and brother.
Go on. Tell me what happened as the war progressed, as the war broke out.
As the war progressed, we finally, 3 months before the war started, we were able to join my father and brother.
3 months before the invasion?
Yes. And the place where my father was very close to the German border. And
where was that? What was the name?
The name was Chanov.
How do you spell that?
CHRZANOW.
Okay.
And we joined them then, and we got the permission to go to Poland. And it was summertime, so we spent a couple of weeks together. My late grandmother, she had a farm where we spent the time together. And then the war started. As you know, as history tells us, that it didn't take the Germans very long. And within a couple of days, they started to invade. They started to come to that particular town where we had settled. And we started to run away from the Germans.
On foot?
On foot, yes.
Right. You and your father and your mother and your brother?
Yes. And we ran across fields, farm fields, you know, to cut the road, because the road was taken up with all kind of armies, the Polish army. But the German caught up with us within the next 3 days with paratroopers. And so we decided to return to the place that we left. And the atrocities started right there and then. There were many people there, Jews, who also fled.
We're talking about 1939 still?
That's right.
So there were a lot of Jews in the town, and what did the Germans do to them?
Well, first of all, they took them, they beat them up, they cut off their beards. And they took them to perform labor to establish these military camps for the Germans, because when they came in, you know, they had to put up tents and this, you know, in order to live. So that's what they took these people for. And they were separated from the families.
Were you among the people that built the camps?
No, not at that time.
You stayed with your mother?
We stayed with my mother, my father, and my brother. No.
None of you went?
My father didn't have a beard. So, you know, he was...
Can you speak up?
I said my father didn't have a beard, so he was spared of that at this particular time. But we proceeded to go back to this little village where we started out from to escape the Germans. And when we came back, we went back to the apartment, and we didn't know what to do and what the next day will bring.
How long were you there?
Well, as the Germans invaded the country and they established themselves, things started to normalize themselves by the Germans to start to grab people off the street, to take them to work in the army installations.
How long did you stay in the town?
How long did I stay in the town? I stayed in the town for another approximately a year and a half.
And how did your family support yourself in this town for a year and a half?
Well, things started to be very hectic. They started to make, I don't know how you would call it in English, but they staged several actions. They staged actions during the day by grabbing people off the street to work for them. Then there was a Jewish committee organized from this little village. Everybody had to work.
Do you and your father included?
Me and my father included, yes.
What kind of work did you do?
Well, this is a whole story what kind of work I did. My father went to work into a factory where they were manufacturing German army coats and jackets.
And what did you do?
I went to work for a German distributor. He distributed soda and beer.
Okay.
I was given a team of horses, which I never knew how to drive, and I was given a carriage, and I had to load the carriage with the sodas and beer and beer barrels and go to the various locations to distribute the sodas and beer, you know, in the beer barrels.
It was hard work and you were not paid.
No, I was not paid for it.
How did your family get food?
Well, my father and my mother, they got paid for the work they did at the factory.
How long, what happened that you left this town? When did you leave?
I left the town when the town was cleared out from Jews.
When was this?
This was in 1942, at the beginning, winter, in February.
And where were you taken?
Well, I escaped due to the fact that I had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to feed the horses and clean them. I noticed what was going on, that the town was sealed off by the German army, and the people, they started to take the people out of their houses.
You saw this and you left.
I seen it, so I went into the woods.
And your family?
They were taken.
Where? Do you know?
My father was taken to a labor camp, and my mother was taken to Auschwitz.
And you had a brother?
Yes, my brother was taken to the camp at the very beginning, in 1940.
Did your mother and your father survive?
My mother did not survive, no.
And your father?
My father survived and my brother survived.
Of the eight.
Okay, so you went into the woods, this is February of 1942.
Yes.
Go on. I'd appreciate if you could talk a little bit more quickly, because we're going to run out of time and I want to get the whole story on tape.
Well, all right, I'm going to talk a little bit more quickly. But, you know, I'm trying to make this successively the way things have happened.
That's what I want you to do.
Right,
exactly.
So I got to think about the time, what and how it, when it happened. Now, I'm going back. Was also permitted from the military government to go to the camps to deliver beer to the army, to the German army. So at one time I delivered a load of beer to a camp which was about 10 miles away, and there I see that my brother was in that camp. So when I entered the camp, I spoke to the German commander there, and I told him that I noticed that person there, and it looks that this is my brother. Can I go see him or talk to him? So he permitted me to talk to him. So when I spoke to him, I made arrangements with the camp commander that he be permitted to come to the village to buy medications for the people in that camp. Now, he got the permission and they permitted him with the guard to come back to this village to buy the medications. When he came to the village, you know, I managed to get him to come home and get a meal and this and that, you know. But we bribed the guard, you know, with vodka and liquor, you know, and he was permitted to repeat these things whenever there was medications needed, which happened from time to time. I also was lucky to establish the fact that people in this camp were from Belgium, and they started to pass away in great numbers. And there was not a cemetery there, so I persuaded the camp commander, I don't know, he must have been a good fellow, to permit me to come on Sunday with a different carriage to pick up the people who died and get 10 people to come into the village to bury all the people who died during the week. And he permitted it by supplying the guards to come to the village. I in turn also started to organize that in the village they started to cook soup and clothing and this and that. So whenever the people came in, that they were treated, like you would say, with a bonus by getting a soup and clothing and things like that. And every time there were other 10 people permitted to come. So it was on a rotating basis that they came into the town and met other people there, and we were able to help him in that way. That was during I was able to establish that.
Okay, so you were in town, and your brother was not there with you. He was in the camp, and you were there with your mother.
Right, and my father.
And then you saw what was happening because you got up really early and you ran into the woods.
Yes.
Okay, take it from there.
So when I was in the woods, I joined a group who were a partisan group. And at one time when we were hidden in a soap factory way outside the village, we were caught by the Germans.
You were what?
We were caught by the Germans, and we were taken to the police, beaten up, and luckily we were sent to a camp.
What camp?
At that time, that was still a forced labor camp.
What was the name of it?
Faulbruck, Faulbruck.
Faulbruck?
Yeah.
Okay. And you were there from 1940 to 1943?
Yes.
Without your family?
Yeah, without my family.
You were there alone?
That's right.
So that was from the age of 15 to 18?
Yeah.
What was life like in that camp?
Life was very tough because sanitary conditions were just indescribable. The food was horrible. And
all only
men. And typhoid broke out in that camp, which I also had. And I survived the incubating period due to the fact that I had a friend who came to me and gave me water. There were no medications, no doctors, no nothing. And that's how I survived the typhoid period. About 85% of the camp died on the typhoid sickness.
So you did forced labor from 1940 to 1943.
Yes.
What kind of labor?
Well, we worked in rebuilding factories for the war from Krupp, the steel manufacturer or whatever he is, and we carried heavy oxygen tanks and cement and unloaded railroad cars, you know, and hard labor. That's and
did
we.
Did you live in barracks?
Yeah, well, no. These camps we lived. It was a mill. It was a 4-floor tall building, and we lived in there, so it was a narrow staircase, so when we had to go down in the morning, it was a horror, because to get these people, hundreds of people down in a narrow stairway, it would have normally taken hours, but you know, there was one guard on top, not the guard, the capo, who started to beat you up, and you just fell down, so to speak, of in order to escape the beating. You see, that's the way the morning started, and then we came out to a place, to a what do you call it? Not the parade place, but the place where we assembled, and there we were counted. And then we marched off to go to work, which was a distance away. And from that place, we returned in the evening.
When you were sent to, what's the name of the camp again? Fallbrook?
Fallbrook.
Fallbrook. When you were... How did you get to Fallbrook in 1940? Even the people who were captured, how did you, what means transportation was
it? We were sent there with a special police car, okay. Because we were caught, so...
So you lived this horrible life for, what, 3 years?
Yes.
And you managed to stay alive? Even
right.
Though you had typhoid, typhus, and you recovered from that.
Yes.
And you did the forced labor.
Right.
And what happened that you left there?
Well, I didn't leave on my own initiative. You know, they took out the transport from the people. You know, we were there, maybe 2,000 people there. So they took a group of about 500 people out, and they sent us to Auschwitz.
How long were you in Auschwitz?
I was in Auschwitz till the liquidation of Auschwitz, which was in 1944.
You were there for a year?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, we knew about Auschwitz, and we were just, when we arrived there, we were just wondering what will happen to us, whether we will be going to the oven or whether we will go into the camp for work. And luckily, we were selected to go to the camp. Nobody from our transport was selected, you know, for the crematorium. And we got processed. We had to drop our clothes, you know, and we got numbered, you know, tattooed the numbers. And then we were assigned to a barrack, And the next day we had to go out to work.
What kind of work did you do?
What kind of work did we do? Well, we worked on the railroad. We worked in rooting out woods to build a highway. We were unloading railroad cars for the army. We were carrying cement bags.
You weren't fed very well, were you?
No.
What was the diet?
The diet was, we got the how do you call it, when you dish out the soup, well, what do you call that, we were dished out a portion of soup, which was water, and it was made out of leaves, and I know that for a fact, leaves from a tree, and then we got something that's supposed to be coffee, which was just dark water. It was never coffee.
How did you keep going? What kept you, what gave you the ability to endure this?
I always am asked the same question, and I must answer it just with faith and endurance and knowing that there'll be a day that I'll be freed. And
did you know of anything that was going on in the world while you were there?
Nothing. We didn't know anything. I had brushes with death so many times, it is too numerous and too unbelievable.
Can you tell me one story?
One story, yes, I can tell you one, which is not very harsh, and it is that from shaving in Auschwitz, I developed a rash on my face, and I was transferred to the sick bay, and the sick bay was created at a time by certain doctors who were in charge of the sick bays, because they started to diminish the population of Auschwitz already some time ago. And if you got on sick bay, you never got out. And I was put into a bed, and I was physically not in the best shape, but I was positioned in the front of a door which opened to the crematorium, where the people from the sick bay were just transferred. And I didn't wash myself, we didn't have many occasions to wash anyhow, but whatever little water I had, I didn't use it to wash my face, and somehow the rash got less without any medication or anything. So one day the doctor came in and looked at my face, and he said, you go out. And I thought that was the end. So I was taken into the back of the barrack, and then a couple hours later I was released back to the barrack where I used to be before. And in my opinion, and anybody who was there and knew what was on, what went on, says the same thing that what I'm saying, that it was a miracle, a real miracle that I got out of there, because it was just like the, like when you got in there, it just was like they say, a kiss of death, that you were doomed to die. So I came out of there and I went back to the barracks and went back to work. And it reestablished my faith that I was not ready to join Kato Mayus. And it proved itself in various other occasions that when I went out on a death march when they liquidated Auschwitz.
That, when was that?
That was in January 1945.
How far did you go on a death march?
Well, we went pretty far.
How many days were you marching?
I was marching about 4 days.
With no clothing to protect yourself from the weather?
No clothing. We had these wooden shoes, you know, and the snow stuck to it, and the snow where we walked on was about 2-3 feet deep, so every time you made a step you sank into the snow, and it was an effort, and anybody who dropped down just got a bullet in their head, and that was the end of it, you know. And even the German guards started to discard their gas masks and the other things what they had. It was too much for them to walk. So imagine we as prisoners, undernourished and sick and all that, you know, to march in the deep freeze, because in Poland when it gets cold there, the temperature is there about, and I'm not exaggerating, at least 40 degrees below zero. And, you know, you had icicles from the vapor from your mouth forming on your nostrils and your eyes and all that, you know, and the hairs and, you know, and the... And it was really an effort to keep yourself going and keep yourself alive.
How did you do it?
I have no answer. I say it was just God who kept me alive, and just, you know, my faith that one day I am going to survive. And that what kept me going, because the condition I was in was subhuman.
I understand. Where did the march end?
The march ended in another concentration camp at Gross Rosen.
G-R-O-S-S-R-O-S-E-N.
I know.
G-R-O-F?
No. G-R-O-S-S.
Yes.
Let's start a new word. Capital R-O-S-E-N. And,
it says here that you were also in Dachau in addition to Auschwitz.
Well, that's... I'm coming to that portion
okay.
Now.
Okay. How long
would you have a cigarette again?
Help yourself.
We came to that camp there, and the conditions there was abnormal, because there were some other camps who evacuated to that particular camp, and there was a transport going out of this camp, and that was after 2 days being there. And I know that the Russians are close by, that I might have to evacuate again. And I said, better let me go on this transport and start my survival that way.
Was that a cattle car?
That was, we got out of the camp, we were loaded into cattle cars, open.
And how long were you traveling in a cattle car?
About 12 days.
During that time, were you given food?
Nothing at all.
No food, no water?
No food, no water.
So people were dying?
People were dying, and we threw him overboard to have more room for us to be able, instead of standing, to sit down. You see, the amount of people who came in, there was no room to sit down. So we had to stand in the one next to the other, you know. So as people started to faint and did this and that, we just threw them overboard. And some people resorted themselves to eat human flesh too, because there was just great amount of hunger. When it was snowing, we kept our mouth open to get some snowflakes to have some kind of a relief. And we traveled under these conditions, being parked on railroad stations, being subjected to air raid attacks. And after 10 days, we arrived in Dachau. In Dachau, there was about, from the whole transport, I would say there was about 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people on the transport. Maybe 1,000 survived.
How long were you in Dachau?
How long was I in Dachau? I was in Dachau till April.
From January to April?
Yes. We were put into quarantine, right? That's the right English word?
Mm-hmm.
And being in quarantine for a week, we were sent to an outside camp belonging to Dachau. And to work. And there, I take a look around and I see my brother there. So I walked over to my brother, and you know, he did not recognize me because I was just skin and bones from the ordeal. And he was in this camp a little longer, so he was known there, and so he took me under his wings and gave me a little bit of his bread and a little extra soup and a little this and that, and he nourished me back a little bit to strength. And there we worked on an airfield. It was an airplane factory, but we were not allowed to go in the factory. But we worked on the outside to make an airfield, you know, so the planes can land and so on and so forth. And we received an order in April to be loaded into railroad cars again, and we found out from the guard that we are going to be loaded into the railroad cars for extermination, for liquidation in the Alps. And we went into these railroad cars and we traveled for a day. At that particular time, I think that the airplane mistook it as a troop transport and started to attack the train, and the chaos erupted among the guards. And we managed to these were not cattle cars, these were closed cars. We managed to open a window and jump out. You know, they had very small, narrow windows on top of the cars, And my brother and I, we said, it's now or never. And we jumped off the train. And this happened to be where woods were. And we ran into the woods and we were hiding there. And there we met the French farm workers. And
you were in France?
No, that was in Germany. And but they had these prisoners, the French prisoner of war, working for the Germans in the fields. And they told us to stay there, and they came back and bought us clothing and a hat, because you know our head was shaved, you know. And they told us in which directions to go, where we would meet other people who would help us. And we walked in that direction, and we linked up with some other French workers who also helped us. On the interim, the German army started to retreat. So one night we woke up there, and in front of us they put a machine gun to wait for the Americans to come. So I thought that this would be the end. But luckily they got orders to move out, and we moved in. We started to walk into a trap, because the soldiers were dug into the fields, and we stepped on one guy's head, you know. And we had a lot of explaining to do, who we are and what we are.
These were American soldiers?
No, the German soldiers.
Okay.
You know, and we told them that we were French workers going back to the village, you know.
Can you get to the end of the story?
Yeah.
I want to get the whole thing on tape.
All right. So anyway, after several other circumstances and meeting up with a priest who told us to go to a certain farmhouse, we went to that farmhouse, which was full of German soldiers who quit the German army and waited for the American army, and we stayed there. And that night the American army overtook the Germans. And in the morning, we walked out of the German farmhouse, and we seen all white flags hanging. And we knew that this must have been the end. And we walked down to the highway, and we met up with some German soldiers who capitulated the German army. And when we came to the highway, we got caught up with a jeep with American soldiers. They didn't know who we were, and they told us to raise our hands and all that. And then